I just had one of those incredible moments where you flash back 45 years to your childhood. Have you ever had that happen to you? I'll tell you what made it happen to me. I just played this.
Travel all over the countryside, ask the Leylands, travel all over the countryside, ask the Leyland brothers. Whatever it is that you want to see, ask the Leylands, no matter whatever that happens to be, ask the Leyland brothers. Come on, me in and then join in the fun, travel all over Australia.
Now, it's my recollection that we sat down around the television, which was black and white back then and probably not much more than a foot across the diagonal before remote controls, and we watched the Leyland brothers, right? We watched the Leyland brothers explore this fantastic country that we're in, and I remember me and my two brothers and mum and dad, we sat around the lounge room. So this is a real flashback moment for me. We're going to talk to Mal Leyland. Talk about finding something you love and then doing it your whole life. Mal and his wife, Lorraine, are actually stopped in their motorhome right now. They're heading back to Queensland for Christmas, and they're stopped just outside Narendra. I thought we might catch up with him. G'day, Mal.
G'day, and how are you?
Mate, I must tell you that I had not thought about you for years, and I went to YouTube when I knew I'd be talking to you, and I played the introduction to your show from the 70s, which is still online. And I've got to tell you, I've never seen so many beautiful Australian women wearing wet Leyland Brothers T-shirts erupting out of the water.
Oh, that became our signature thing, you see.
I never even picked up on that as a five-year-old kid. I wonder what was wrong with me at the time. Anyway, I used to love your show, and I grew up to love our inland Australia, you know, outback New South Wales and all of those places that many Australians tragically don't visit. You're still doing it all these years later.
Well, yeah, we've made a lifetime out of travel. Luckily, my wife, Lorraine, who incidentally was in that sequence you mentioned, she and I both enjoy the travel. We kind of got itchy feet, and we've been lucky. We've been able to make a living out of it, and I love writing as well, so we're writing magazine articles every now and then, and we're doing that on this trip. It's just been a bit of a gypsy blood, I think. Whether you've got it or not, you end up with it after you've seen some of this country. And I haven't found anywhere that I find boring. I find it all pretty interesting.
I wonder if it's a case for you after all these years of going back to the places that you've seen before, or do you still discover new things?
Well, you do, and you discover changes you'd never believed, you know, like places I haven't been to for a long time, and you turn up and you remember how it was, but all of a sudden, hang on a minute, what's this? Oh, this is a suburban outskirts. That didn't exist when we were here 25, 30 years ago.
Well, I wonder if both you and your late brother, Mike, weren't in some way a catalysing influence on to all of those grey nomads who are out there in outback Australia right now, because you really did open up the land to a whole bunch of people watching at home who had never seen this stuff before.
Well, I'm pretty sure we did. We didn't know we were doing it, mind you. We were just doing what we enjoyed doing, and we were sent to where we went by our viewers. They wrote a letter in, and we'd hear about these places, and then we'd go and check it out and film it and put it on our show. So, in a way, we had our research team were our viewers. But it's only when we went back in recent times we managed to realise just how much impact we were having. I've written my biography, you see, which came out this year, and as a result I've been getting around and meeting people who've been buying it, and they come into shops and talk to you, and they all say the same as you said. I used to sit around the TV when I was a kid watching this. And we never actually had any idea that so many people were sort of hooked on watching us. I mean, we did get big audiences. We got up to 3 and sometimes 4 million viewers back when the population's about half what it is now.
Isn't that amazing? That's more than news and current affairs. In fact, there are news and current affairs programs that would love to get that number right about now.
Well, that's true. So I sometimes think maybe we're doing something then that should be still doing. So
well, I'll tell you what, it's funny the way memory works, isn't it? Because I spoke briefly earlier on today to my producer, Cara, and she said, would you like to talk to Mal Leyland? First, she said, do you know who Mal Leyland is? And I looked at her like, yeah, because I grew up in the 70s. And instantly, the theme song to your show popped into my head after all this time, and I haven't spent too much of the intervening period obsessing about it.
Well, that's what I find amazing, because we made that show for 16 years, and that song was used at the beginning, at the end, and a little sting was used at the outplay and the inplay of every commercial break. So in total, I suppose it was aired a lot of times, and they were repeated. They've been repeated over and over. And even now, you can still pick them up on the internet. But I think the Grey Nomad movement we're referring to, a lot of those people were the younger ones who watched our show and were influenced by it and wanted to get out and see it. And we went to a caravan show recently, and there was about 400 caravans there. It was a big rally. And I was amazed at how many of them came up to me and said how much that they'd been influenced to get out and see our country by watching our show when they were younger. So I suppose we did have a bit more of an influence over people's travel plans than we ever expected.
Well, there was a lot of difficulty technically with producing a TV show in the Outback back then as well, I imagine, because you've got to shoot it on film. You don't just shoot it on a digital video camera like you would today. How difficult was that, and how many people travelled around as part of your crew?
Well, you're right. That is the big difference between what happened then and now. First of all, we didn't have a crew. It was just Mike and Pat, his first wife, and then later Margie, his second wife, and then with me and Lorraine. That was it. Sometimes the kids got in and did things and helped hold microphones and whatnot. At one stage, we did employ another husband and wife team for a few years to help us as well. But there was no big crew. We just went and did it all ourselves, like shooting home movies. And we were using film, which meant that by the time we'd shot it, it would be 6 weeks or so before we got home from a trip. Then we'd get to see what we'd taken. Then you've got to go through it all. Meticulous notes have to be kept when you're filming so you know what you're looking at.
Well, it's pretty hard to go back for a pickup shot for something that you overexposed, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oddly enough, we didn't get too many losses. We had one big bad one once when the processor that processed all the film had a hiccup and damaged a lot of film with big scratches on it. But for the most part, we were pretty lucky. We came through. I mean, imagine what it must be like shooting a feature film when they got heart in mouth waiting for the film to come out of the lab.
Absolutely. The rushes to come back.
Every week.
Well, see, now they're all looking at it on the monitor and they play back every clip and they go, yeah, we've got it. Pretty different back then.
Oh, completely different. In fact, I think the discipline that we had to work under is totally different to film crews today. They, you know, today you can look at it on the video, check it, do it again if it's not right and all that kind of stuff. And we used to shoot on very low shooting ratios. That means like how much you film to how much you keep. We would work on about 3.5 to 1.
Yeah, right.
Most film crews work on 25 or 30 to 1, sometimes up to 100 to 1 when they're doing wildlife stuff.
Absolutely. You got David Attenborough be leaving a lot of film on the cutting room floor.
Well, yeah, but I mean, when you're waiting for an animal to do something, I guess you do get a lot of false starts.
Yeah, they don't tend to be too receptive to the word action, do they?
Yeah. You send them to bed with the script, they don't read it.
No, mongrels, that's right. Now, just changing tack slightly, all these grey nomads that you run into, do you ever get the opportunity to have a quiet beer in a pub in the outback, or are you always bailed up?
No, not really. Yes, we do. We don't get – people are pretty good, you know. They recognise us. We know that because you can sort of tell. They have a little bit of a chat amongst themselves. But they don't always come over and make themselves known. They're fairly polite that way, so we get to have our own privacy. But I don't mind it when they do because, to be perfectly honest, it's a bit of a – well, it's an ego booster, a bit of a flattering experience when people come up to you. Like, you could be camped up in the Gulf Carpentaria somewhere in the middle of nowhere and the bloke pulls up next to you and, you know, he's got all his four-wheel drive gear. He might have a couple of dogs in the back and they're on their holidays. They got their swags all strapped on the roof rack, you know. And, like, that's us. That's what we did for most of our lives. And they're there for the same reason. When they come over and say hello, you're only too pleased to give them a bit of helpful information. Say, oh, look, when you go down the road there, don't bother going into that road. There's another little track further on that'll take you to a little campsite on the beach, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that fantastic?
It's good. It's nice to be able to do that.
All right. Now, you're famous.
What we're doing.
Mate, you are famous for saying that you want to die with your boots on. So what does that mean exactly?
Well, I don't want to stop and then just decay and vegetate into a nothing man. I'd rather, well, I guess if I had a choice, I'd like to climb up a mountain, probably when I'm about 101, and take the perfect sunrise picture and then just fall off my perch.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a bad way to go, considering the alternatives, that's for sure. So, look, I really admire you, A, because I grew up and with your program on television and you're an Australian icon. It's a privilege to talk to you. But I also admire that kind of attitude. And thirdly, people who find something that they love doing and they just spend their lives doing that, which is also a brilliant piece of advice that any young Australian might want to take with them into the careers advice seminar that they might go in so that they don't get headed in the wrong direction. Finally, before I let you go, you see all these grey nomads on the road. You must see them making some classic mistakes. So if anyone's thinking of retirement, buying the motorhome, doing a bit of a Mike and Mal, what mistakes have you seen and what advice would you give?
Try it before you buy it would be the best piece of advice, because I've seen couples sell up everything, including the family home, buy the biggest, latest and greatest, and go away, and after 6 or 7 months they're at each other's throats and one of them doesn't like it. Best idea would be go out there, give it a go, rent something, give it a try, make sure it's what you want before you make the plunge. But most people will love it, really do. I mean, to me, we live in the luckiest country in the world. It's the best, it's the freest country in the world where you can travel and do this. You know, it's the same distance from London to Moscow as it is from Perth to Sydney. And we don't have to carry a passport.
No, exactly.
Across all those borders.
Exactly.
And they all speak the same language.
Mate,
sort of.
But the stark beauty and the remoteness and the incredible changes in the sunlight. I mean, there are people who I guess will grow up in Sydney or Melbourne and never see that. And to me, that just seems like a tragic waste not to see that stark beauty. And also, it's exemplary of the history that grew Australia into the country it is today.
Well, that's one of the things that I would suggest too, is if people want to get out there, do it as a family. Take your children with you, because it'll bring to life our history. You know, when you go into places where our explorers went before you and you realise that all they had was a horse and a pack saddle and some idea and a bit of a rough compass of where they were going, I mean, you have to admire what they achieved, and without them it wouldn't have opened up this wonderful country. And the other people who I admire more than our explorers are our present day farmers, because they know this country, they know how tough it is, but they're resilient lot, they work hard, and without them we wouldn't have anything to go down to the supermarket and buy to eat, would we?
No, brilliantly said, absolutely. We need to do more for our farmers, because we could become an agricultural powerhouse once again if we just do the right thing. Mal, it's an absolute privilege to talk to you, and I did grow up listening and watching your show, and I still remember the theme song, so you're indelibly etched into my mind, and I thank you for making yourself available this afternoon.
Oh, that's no trouble at all. I'll be back on the road again in about 10 minutes.
Doing what you do best, but hopefully not dying with your boots on. Yeah.
We're heading home for Christmas to have some time with the grandkids.
No, sounds fantastic.
And I'm going to do some more writing. I love writing. I'm writing some more novels and, you know, whodunits in the outback and stuff like that. So keep watching this space. I ain't finished yet.
Fantastic, mate. Lovely to talk to you, and all the best on your travel home.
Okay, thank you.
Cheers. That's Mal Leyland.